Welcome to the Division Sunday Night Divisional Round edition of the PFF Forecast. For many of you, it is the 18th, but we're recording this on the night of the 17th. This is a fun one. We go over both the Saints and Bucks game that we just watched, Browns and Chiefs from earlier, and then we're going to preview both of the conference championships, talk a little bit about some potential Super Bowl matchups, Deshaun Watson getting traded, where his best spots are for him, even some Lamar Jackson, whether it's a no-brainer or not that the Ravens should extend him, plus a few other things mixed in there. Drew Brees obviously retiring and where he ranks all time. So this is a great show. Let's rock. What a day. What a day. You're sweating through the Chiefs like a maniac. I was worried for you. It's your birthday. You're a Chiefs fan. Mahomes gets hurt. They pull out a win. We're going to talk about that game in a second. We're going to talk about the Bucks and the Saints first, though, because I sweated through that game like a mother. And if you follow me on Twitter, you may have seen some feelings about Bruce Arians. What was your takeaway from that game?
Well, as you know, obviously being a fan, I was more nervous about like that gestures at everything, but I had Chiefs like, cause that there were the betting moves today made the most obvious teaser available, which was Chiefs at like -2.5 or less, Bucks at +8.5, because that game got bet down to 2.5. And obviously the Chiefs leg was a huge sweat at the end. Yep. And then the Bucks won. I think that only ever got to a 7-point deficit. I showed up to work here. It was a 7-point deficit. And then the Saints had the ball. You're talking about Jared Cook fumble. Dan Campbell's pupil, by the way. Jared Cook fumble. Then you had the interception by Devin White. Then you had the final interception there. Like that really turned on a dime.
This was Bruce Arians doing less with more than any coach, I think, in recent memory has done in a game on a day where Drew Brees, who may have done more with less than any QB in terms of talent, this career that he had.
You're saying he had the lowest amount of talent and he...
Right. In his final game, and I thought that was very interesting. And Drew Brees basically won this game for Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay ran the ball on 30 of 51 first and second downs in this game. The highest run percentage of any team in the divisional round, higher than the Green Bay Packers, who were stomping on the Rams for most of that game, and that actually makes some sense. I come out of this game as someone that thought the Bucks had turned the corner offensively, and I am very worried about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers because of what Bruce Arians, they just have not figured it out yet. They just simply have not figured it out. It worries me. Well, so looking ahead to Tampa Bay or to Green Bay, I'm like, man, Green Bay got lucky, I think.
Yeah, and the other thing is when you think about teams in the future, football's a noisy game. So the question becomes, when you win a game like this, when you get a ton of positive variance, yeah, do you feel it's sort of Seahawkian in the idea that like
I was right, I should have run Rojo, yeah, exactly, and Fournette all the time.
Exactly.
I mean, at the end of the game, those guys also kind of got going, right? When you're winning the game, it's easy for you to feel as though you're winning because of what you're doing after you've taken a lead, mm-hmm, which was run the ball successfully. Now, I will say this, Tom Brady continues to throw the ball well. Like if you were thinking about one of these teams winning this game and having a chance to beat the Green Bay Packers, it was not the New Orleans Saints. I said this to you during the game. If the Saints win this game, I am taking out a loan, the biggest loan that my credit score qualifies me for, and I am putting it on the Green Bay Packers. I'm wearing a green hoodie right now because I was prepared to go all in on the Green Bay Packers. We have Green Bay Packers Super Bowl futures. I was ready. I was ready for it. I also stood to make about $2,000 with a Bucks money line win. So I was happy either way. Let's talk a little bit about Drew Brees though for a second. He is, if this is his last game, where would you, how would you like kind of put his career, you're much better at this than I am, put his career in context, the other quarterbacks that he's played against this era, where would you have him?
I would put Brees in a tier beneath the GOATs.
And in the GOATs being Manning.
Well, like, so Manning, Brady, Montana, Steve Young.
Patrick Mahomes, Chad Henne.
Chad Henne being the GOAT back. By the way, Steve Young got to start as a backup. Maybe we just haven't given Chad Henne enough time yet. the elite of the elite. I'm actually, obviously, I want to sort of think about all time, obviously. But, like, you know, Favre, like Rodgers, I think you can... You can dice it up here as far as like who deserves what. Elway, Marino, you know, Kurt, like I think Brees has less of a case for that top group of like a half a dozen players than a player like Favre, a player like Rodgers, a player, you know, sort of on that edge like Elway. It's weird. Going across eras is really weird because Elway had seasons of being like 4-12, 6-10, all that kind of stuff. But so did Brees. Brees had three consecutive 7-9 seasons. So I don't think he's in that conversation with Manning, Brady, Montana. Even like Steve Young, people will laugh at this idea, but Steve Young is one of the best quarterbacks to ever play the game statistically.
I won't laugh at that. He's incredible.
But, you know, but I think Brees is firmly in that sort of second. He's Hall of Famer, first ballot. He's firmly in that conversation, I think, with guys like, with guys, you know, like Elway, you know, Favre, where there's like, oh, wait, there's like a little issue with Favre. It was he threw too many interceptions. Big games, he kind of had an issue. Brees, I think, is very similar in the sense that, like, no one, Brees never struck fear in any opposition for the last 10 years, despite the fact that the Saints were a, and still are a very good football team that you had to take seriously. I mean, they if they didn't go 0 for 3 or 4 in the turnover department today, they'd probably win.
Yep. The Bucs, this was about the Saints losing the game far more than it was the Tampa Bay Buccaneers winning this game. I mean, this was the fumble by Jared Cook and the interceptions by Drew Brees. Sean Payton, to his credit, Sean Payton and Tom Brady on the same team win this game by 40 points. Doesn't matter who else surrounds them. That is clear. Sean Payton dialed up the play that the Bears ran against them last week. Certainly the Bucs watched that play on film. He ran it against them and just stunned the Bucs. So, you know, I think about Brees, and I think you hit it on the head. He never had the aura of a Rodgers, of a Brady, of a Manning. If you think about other sports, you think about a Jordan, a LeBron. In moments that were the biggest, he was not rising above everyone to that extent. But I will say this. I think what he did for New Orleans, that city and that team, is as impressive as what any quarterback has maybe done for any other city, given what was going on with that city and how he created, he lifted them up when they needed it most.
For sure. And he took a Saints team, I mean, prior to when Brees was, prior to Brees becoming who he was, the Saints had never won the NFC South. They had, I believe, two division titles in their entire history, and they were both NFC West titles. And they had come off the Aaron Brooks era where, you know, Aaron Brooks was a fine quarterback, but then when the wheels fell off, they played half a season in San Antonio, some games in New York, the Hurricane Katrina. Like, they were looking for stability, and Peyton and Brees brought that. And obviously, you can never take away the Super Bowl from that city, and they deserve it. And, you know, there was a scandal with the spy or the bounty gate associated with it. But, you know, this is one thing where you think about, it took the Saints all the way till 1987 to make their first playoff appearance, all the way to 1991 to win their first division, and to 2000 to win their first playoff game. And now we're talking about a player who has put New Orleans in a position where we're griping about the fact that they can't win playoff games in the second round, or
they
can't
win a Super Bowl.
Exactly. Yeah. And so broadly speaking, Drew Brees deserves a ton of praise for almost everything he's done for that franchise. The problem is now when you move forward, $90 million over the estimated cap, even if that number's too low, you're in deep shit, right? So like, and then the question becomes, you know, who takes advantage of this? We talk about job openings. Arthur Smith just went to Atlanta. Not that bad. Carolina still probably without a quarterback. They're not a threat. Tampa, Brady's going to retire at some point. Like, well, Tampa, this is an interesting division.
Tampa should be trying to get Brady squared. Tampa Bay should bring Joe Brady in ASAP. I love Bruce Arians personally as a person. He's fantastic.
Yeah, he seems like a great guy.
But I have not seen a team fail to adjust the way that the Bucs have failed to adjust to the 21st century. I mean, their offense is horrific. And the fact that they have five, not two, not three, five receivers. Tyler Johnson's out there.
That was an incredible catch.
Scotty Miller made a play. Rob Gronkowski can still get open down the football field.
Cameron Braid is pretty good.
Haven't seen too high before? I'm sorry. We need to get Darius Butler in here to help explain how this isn't the first time you've seen this coverage. And I don't think you should be wasting what Tom Brady is throwing the ball well. Chris Godwin, I mean, he has that, right? That's an incredible throw by Brady. You shouldn't be wasting the best years of his career. Brady squared in Tampa Bay, I'm telling you right now. But I think Sean Payton is still the guy that New Orleans wants to have there. Why would you not feel confident about the Saints rebuilding with Jameis Winston?
Well, just because so many other... So because right now, I think we're being a little bit mesmerized by the stability that is the Saints. I mean, when you look at that team, receivers are mostly good, offensive line's mostly good, defense as unstable as it is, they're good. Mm-hmm. And my question is we've always seen with Jameis is a good football player, but if there's enough perturbations around him, he can still put up stats, he can still be impressive, yards per play, great, but can you win football games? That was how it was in Tampa, right?
Okay,
like,
but for a second, Bruce Arians is over here ruining vintage Tom Brady. So you want to tell me, like, because I get it, you know, from a perspective of we've seen Jameis Winston on a bad team not lift them up. I get it. And he's been turnover-worthy prone and all that stuff. But he has made big plays when they are there. His positively graded throw rate, the highest, basically, you know, for his career over that time span relative to everyone else. Now, it comes with a bunch of turnover-worthy plays, too. But Sean Payton will open up those throws. And he will not be in as many positions to try and win the game by himself with an offense that is, you know, from
gestures at everything.
If you can't tell that I'm frustrated, I'm sitting there watching a team.
With
the one quarterback, you have two teams on the field, both very skilled. One quarterback needs an arm replacement. The other quarterback is dropping dimes, and yet you need a +3 turnover differential to win the game with the better quarterback.
And actually a good game out of the guy we've much maligned. Like, imagine if Fournette had given like a median performance for him.
He actually caught one of the throws.
He was actually somewhat efficient, like flopping around there. Like,
let me ask you this, because I want to get your opinion. So, if you are the GM of the Saints, what are you doing right now? Okay, Brees gives an emotional speech. Locker room clears out. The crying is finished. It's Monday morning. What are you doing?
We were talking about this earlier. I'm probably shedding every single veteran deal that
you're tearing it all down.
And I'm going into next season having an open mind about a competition between Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston.
Are you drafting a guy? Are you trying to trade up?
Well, they don't have, like, they've been, not only have they been hemorrhaging money in the draft, they've been hemorrhaging draft picks. So, like,
say Zach Wilson, okay, BYU guy. We love him here at PFF. We have him in most of our mock drafts going number two. He's number two on our big board. But let's say the NFL's lower on him. He falls into where Mahomes and Watson went, the 12 range. There are teams that maybe don't really need a quarterback that badly. Like, you could maybe trade Michael Thomas and some draft picks.
Yeah.
And get there and draft a guy, and you have Sean Payton, and you still have some playmakers. I don't know.
I think it's – I mean, if you can convince Jameis to come back for $5 to $6 million a year.
I mean, who's signing him?
Well, I think that was part of the long con. To like have him sit and be like, had the whole league be like, look, he sat behind Taysom Hill.
Yeah, he's
like,
terrible.
How good must he be? In reality, he's probably better than 10 of the quarterbacks that are starting for other teams. So if he's in there and he's like, and you start him, my thing is, again, what you don't want to do, and this is where we're going to talk about Cleveland here in a sec. Cleveland was in an awful circumstance. And one of the things, people gave him shit for not taking Wentz. People gave him crap for not taking Watson. And they end up with Baker. And even though, granted, Watson's terrific. Like, there's, and Wentz has already taken a team to the Super Bowl. But now you look, and there's been a lot of perturbations to Cleveland. Their best receiver's out. Their defense is kind of, you know, and Ward's been out. Like, Garrett spent a lot of time today on the sideline. And yet, they built an infrastructure for the QB first. And while the hard part is the way that survival curves work in the NFL, like, you might not be around to see it, and Sashi wasn't.
Yep.
But
died for our sins.
But it's hard not to look at Cleveland and say, okay, if you're in that bad of circumstances, you know, there's a small chance Jameis will be your franchise quarterback. Give that a chance in 2021.
Yeah.
Draft a QB in 2022.
Okay.
After being bad. That way you don't have to give up a ton of picks to go up and get the guy at two or whatever.
Are you ready for my ultimate throw the world on its head? Okay. NFC team, very close to a particular city that is in the AFC that has a quarterback with a no-trade clause who has said, I'm not staying here unless the owner fires himself. Oh,
Dallas and Houston?
Houston. Okay. Now, because Watson has the no trade clause, he can kind of, you know, say where he wants to go, right? I mean, you know, ultimately it's going to be a lot. He's going to have to take a really hard line, but it would be getting him out of the conference. You could maybe get back, you'd obviously get back a bunch of draft picks. You'd get some players. You could maybe even get Taysom Hill. I don't know if that's who you want, right?
Like, yeah.
But if you're Deshaun Watson, and I was thinking about where Watson would want to go, like the Jets, no. The Dolphins, sure. But the Saints or the Niners would be fantastic because you could go compete. Deshaun Watson with Kyle Shanahan's great. Deshaun Watson with Sean Payton would be fucking amazing as well.
Yeah, I think the only issue is
there are a lot of issues.
Yeah.
But
this is again, Sam Darnold. I'm not trying to be,
Sam Darnold's another guy.
Yeah, but Sam, the problem with Darnold is like he's probably too costly. Like this is why they have to do something about the rookie wage scale because
how much
Mac Jones at 32nd is going to be probably what, $3 million a year, $2 million a year? Like that's what Jordan Love costs to Green Bay. Like Jordan Love, people talk about how bad of a pick it is. He hasn't played a snap, and it's not even the worst waste of money at the position. Like, you know, a guy that's picked high, by the time he gets to, you know, the fifth year option, you're talking about 10-ish million, which is still it's good, but like, this is New England, this is New Orleans with Winston. You're going from 10 million to like 2 or 3 with your quarterback, and that's a huge deal.
Well, Mickey Loomis did a deal with the devil, and we'll see if he can do another one.
Yeah, I'm interested to see them. I mean, look, I have far less of a like scrapping and clawing mentality. Mm-hmm. For me, it's like the party's over. You didn't win another Super Bowl. Move on. And all you're doing here is making it worse by prolonging another. Like, do you think the Saints franchise benefited at all from this season? Long term? No.
I mean, sure, but that's such a hard. They had a chance to win the Super Bowl, right?
So yes.
It's not like you. You know, there are teams with a lesser chance to win the Super Bowl.
I'm not saying if I had the chance to make that bet again, would I?
Yeah.
I think I probably still would. But at the same time, like, the needle is a thin one to thread here.
I agree. I do think they have a lot of talented players. And unlike you, I think Sean Payton is really good. Maybe he gets
He's really good. I think he's the worst left in the playoffs.
The gap between Sean Payton and Bruce Arians is the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, the rest of the coaches were pretty damn good.
Let me read you the odds provided by an offshore book. Lee Sharp tweeted this out, our good friend, member of PFF's family, Lee Sharp. Jets 2-1. These are odds to get to Sean Watson next season. Jets 2-1. Dolphins 3-1. Bears 4-1. That'd be funny. Broncos 5-1. Colts 8-1. Patriots 8-1. Eagles 10-1. Panthers 12-1. Washington Football Team 12-1. Lions and Raiders also 12-1. Saints are 15-1. Jaguars 15-1. Cowboys and Niners are 21. That obviously makes me very sad. But where should Deshaun Watson want to go out of those kind of favorites there? Jets, Dolphins, Bears, Broncos, Colts, Pats.
Dolphins are the best option for him,
I think, by a large margin. Yeah.
And like, it's also quality of life. Like, this might be controversial, but like, Brian Flores seems like the kind of guy who players in the NFL want to play for. Mm-hmm. And you know, Cal McNair doesn't have to speak for his father, but his father once said a number of bad things about players, right? Mm-hmm. That one thing doesn't make a person, right? Like, you can come back from that, but like, there's a number of things and they all pile up, and that's when everybody leaves. Mm-hmm. Flores seems to have made zero mistakes, because you look at the tank last year was a tank in which they found out a ton about their players, but they still got a high draft pick. They traded away Minka in a way that was sort of like a, again, he handled everything well, and all the way to the point of Tua, who was clearly a organizational level decision to start him, but he's still playing Fitzmagic in games because he knows his team, he knows how much it means to his team. Like, Brian Flores is an A+ as far as handling humans. So from that perspective, like, Watson clearly wants to go somewhere where he... And then the other thing, and this is not true, I talked about this last week, and it was part of the reason why I said, I don't know if he does get traded. Of the teams that have to give up a ton to get Watson, Miami has the most. So, like, they would be the least affected by giving up these picks. If another team, you know, if the Niners went and gave up picks for Watson, they'd be kind of like the Bears, and, like, they don't have another one for another few years.
Yeah.
Miami can kind of get this all out of the way relatively soon and obviously get Watson into the fold. They have to figure out who their OC is. They have to figure out, a wide receiver aside from Devontae Parker, who they really like. But that's the best spot, in my opinion.
I think it's not even close. I think it's the Dolphins. Here are a couple that I think are kind of sneaky dark horses that would be good for Watson. Carolina, if Joe Brady stays. Any other team, if Joe Brady goes there, I'm looking at maybe even the Eagles. And then I obviously think the Niners would be a spectacular place for him. But
yeah,
the Dolphins are the clear one.
I would be very – if he went to San Francisco, I'd not only be happy for you, but I would be happy for the idea that Shanahan finally gets an elite quarterback. Because
– Oh, Matt Ryan. Come on, man.
And Matt's great, right? But Matt's sort of – yeah, okay. He had Matt for 1 year, that or 2 years, and most of the time he's preferred. And Matt's not an improviser. Matt's a very elite quarterback.
Speaking of, I just got a text from a friend of ours, initials JT, who said, "What about the Falcons?"
It's a good question.
That's an interesting.
The only issue with the Falcons, and this would have to be.
Does Matt Ryan have a no trade?
I don't know if that's the case, but the problem with the Falcons is both them and Houston are negative cap space.
Ah, so tricky, like, that work.
But yeah. but Atlanta's got more freedom than
I would feel terrible for Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan deserves more than that.
Yeah,
Matt's
really had a good career.
He's underrated.
Where does Matt Ryan sit? Matt's a tier below the tier below we were talking about,
yeah,
right?
I
like,
think
we're
so.
Very good. Hall of very good. If he wins, let's say he. If he had like a...
There are far worse quarterbacks to win.
If he had a finish to his career like Kurt Warner did, he'd be in the conversation, I think.
Absolutely. All right, let's go to Browns and Chiefs. So this game was interesting because we thought, would the Browns come out, everyone thinks they're going to run the ball, and would they throw the ball? Would they run a ton of play action? Would they kind of attack the middle of that Kansas City defense? And no. They really didn't. They ran Chubb. They threw to Chubb. He dropped passes. And you look at that game and you go, man, the Browns are dead in the water. And I know that the Mahomes injury, that was the big thing. But I really thought that Baker Mayfield's play kept them in that game to the point where when Mahomes did get injured, they had a chance.
For sure. Absolutely. Chiefs defense also played really well to the point where Baker had to play a good game just for them to put up what they did. If Mayfield had played a kind of a 2019 Mayfield game, I don't know how much the Browns actually scored, but he made, I mean, the throw to Higgins when the fumble happened at the end of the half was a great throw. There was another corner route to Higgins.
Jones on the go route too.
Yeah, I don't know if he actually was in bounds on that catch, but then there was.
We have reached, alert, we have reached the part of the show where the Chiefs fandom arrives. We are now going to hear from Eric Eager on all of the things that are controversial and the Chiefs fan take.
The throw that he had to Austin Hooper on the fourth down was a very good throw.
Don't know if he was in bounds. Incredible.
The Hooper play, I mean, that ball kind of twisted.
Yeah, there were a lot of very questionable plays. I can't wait to hear your take on the helmet.
This is one where if you look back, and again, I'm not going to speculate. I'm a doctor, but I'm not that kind of doctor. I'm not going to speculate on Mahomes' brain injury or how severe it is or whatever. But assuming he plays next week against Buffalo, and let's say they win the Super Bowl, this game, when you look back at it, in Chiefs history is going to be a game where I think the defense should get a lot more credit than it will. People are going to focus on Chad Henne and Andy Reid and how – again, contrasts. Andy Reid, shorthanded, without Watkins, without Edwards-Helaire, without Mitchell Schwartz, without Mahomes, still went for, like, still did the positive EV things.
The fourth and one at about
the fourth and one, but also throwing the football. Like, they threw the football not on that last drive. They had the Browns had the one timeout. You know, by the way, Stefanski was a little bit rough today as far as fourth downs and as far as timeout taking and challenges and stuff. But, you know, they ran on first down, took the clock down. They threw on second down, and to Henny's credit, when there was pressure, instead of dumping it and losing 40 seconds, took a sack. Then he turned into Steve Young running the football on the third down, and then they had the brilliant fourth down. So there's a lot of things that were good about this game for Kansas City. Unfortunately, moving into next week, there's the cloud of whether or not Mahomes will play, because Buffalo is a good enough team where if Mahomes doesn't play.
Yeah, I mean, okay. Mahomes doesn't play. Do they have a shot? You think Andy Reid is as much of a wizard as he is, can he beat the Bills with Chad freaking
Henne? Well, so I showed you the look-ahead lines prior to this week, and it had Cleveland as 4.5-point underdogs at Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
Going into I want to make a contrast because the game right now is -3, open at +1.5. We started to see reports coming in. It's now all the way out to a full 3. So basically, the uncertainty associated with Mahomes is probably worth about a half a point right now. Except for the fact, obviously, you look at Buffalo last night and they didn't play as impressively as we might have expected, especially offensively. There was some weather, and the Chiefs, I would say prior to Mahomes' injury, played a very impressive game. We're on the verge of covering for the first time in
their months. Offense was fantastic.
So, I would say, what would you say the spread of this game would have been? Let's say Mahomes finishes the game and they would have won like 29-10.
They win 29-17. I think it is. Okay, so here's the thing. I think the concussion may be. The concussion is a big deal. Don't get me wrong. But I wouldn't just throw out the toe injury, okay? Because there were some throws that he missed. Maybe it was a part. Romo said he thought it was the toe. Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. But you need all things to be good. The Bills are good enough to beat the Chiefs at full strength.
Yeah, for sure.
You need all of those pieces to work. So I would go Mahomes at full strength, and they win 29-10. It should be 4.
So, and the uncertainty associated with Mahomes, and this isn't
the uncertainty with it. I think he clears the concussion protocol, and the toe makes me think
similar to the ankle a season ago when they lost to Indianapolis and they lost to Houston.
His mobility is massive, and I can't believe. Look, I thought Andy Reid was fantastic in this game. Okay, the fact that, and this is what I want to talk about with Andy Reid. What people don't get and when they say, oh, Mahomes, you know, he benefits from Andy Reid's system. Mahomes takes Andy Reid's great plays and he takes them to the 95th, 99th percentile almost all the time. Okay? But the greatness of Reid is that he can throw Chad Henne in there, call the same plays, and the 50th percentile can win you a game when you have a lead. He called that play on fourth down from the shotgun. It was the same play he would have called with Mahomes. That is the brilliance of Andy Reid.
Well, the way that Henne / Reid negotiated the play clock there, I mean, it was really, it was terrific, right?
I mean, and after Henne threw that terrible throw in the end zone, to me, it reminded me of when you're kind of feeling it in pickup.
Yeah.
And, you know, you take a little fadeaway jumper and you yell Kobe when you shoot it, expecting a swish, and it's like 5 feet short. You know, maybe you're by yourself even.
Yeah.
That was Henne. He's like, oh, I'm Mahomes on this throw. You know, and it was like, actually, buddy, you're not. Take the throw that's there.
Throw to Kelce on the penultimate third down to that interception was amazing. I mean, Kelce, this was the question I was talking to somebody who I know about the game, and they were kind of nervous about it. They, you know, had a rooting interest in the Chiefs. And I just asked, who's covering Kelce today? And you saw Denzel Ward got like twisted into a pretzel. And then they tried to cover him with Anderson Dejo, and that was cheeks.
That
and then they
work.
Tried to cover him with Simone Takitaki or whatever the guy's name is, and he got, and it's like, I actually have the exact same question about the Buffalo Bills this next week. And that's
why it ain't gonna be Edmonds.
Yeah. And that's why, or Milano either.
Milano.
Mitt
Milano's, by the way, are a bottom three cookie.
Yeah.
Mark
but
my words.
But so then that's what makes me think it's very similar to the Vikings game and the Packers game last year, where the spread's going to be somewhere because they're at home.
Yep. No. So it was funny. I wrote this down. The biggest difference between Cleveland and Buffalo, Baker played tremendous today.
Yeah.
It's not the quarterback. It's Stephon Diggs.
Baker played better today than Josh Allen played last night.
This whole season, I've been skeptical of Baker Mayfield, even this good stretch. Why? Because they've played bad teams. They've played in good game scripts. This was a bad game script. He played very well. This is the most confident I have been that Baker Mayfield can be the guy in Cleveland. He was terrific today. He did not lose this game. He gave them a chance to win it. The breaks did not go their way. But the biggest difference is that Stephon Diggs is always open. And Josh Allen, yes, he's better than Baker Mayfield. But the difference between Stephon Diggs and anyone running on the outside for Cleveland is an ocean. And that, I think, is the biggest thing that Buffalo will be able to score so much more because they
Kansas
have those
City also, without Fenton today inactive, also lost Breland during the middle of the game. Breland's not a great corner, but he starts for them. It's a thing to monitor. Do they put a guy who had a really great game was Tyrann Mathieu, both blitzing, tackling, you know, covering. Do they put Mathieu in the slot and play Snead and Ward on the outside? I mean, this is a game that's really going to stretch the Chiefs out. I know Davis got hurt for Buffalo last night, but like they go four deep at wide receiver and are very good. So, and the other thing, the Chiefs, like they pay Frank Clark a lot of money and he had two pressures today.
It wasn't great.
And one of them was unblocked.
If Henne is announced the starter, what would you make the spread of that game?
Buffalo in Kansas City, I would make +6. Or sorry, -6. So I would make KC +6.
Yeah.
And that's only, again, the thing that people are going to gravitate towards is the fact that last season when they started Matt Moore against Green Bay, it was they lost by 7. And when they started him against Minnesota, another playoff team, they won the game outright. And there is a number of things. Both of those teams were playoff teams last year in the NFC. Chiefs hang around. I wouldn't be very confident, obviously. I would probably unload all my Kansas City futures and bet them on, you know, Buffalo or something, or just pray that Green Bay gets out of the NFC. But
yeah, I think being short of 7, there's a difference between Matt Moore playing week 10 and Matt Moore playing in the playoffs. I'm talking about Matt Moore and Chad Henne basically interchangeably,
they're the same thing.
Right?
I mean, it's,
you know,
it's,
so like there's a difference between your backup playing in a random week 10 game and your backup playing in the conference championship game. Especially without, you know, is Mitchell Schwartz going to be able to come back?
I would be very surprised if Mitchell Schwartz played again for
the
Chiefs.
So would I. And I think here's the thing for the Chiefs. The Chiefs have the best quarterback by a pretty decent margin. And so all of the any other holes that they have, small or big, get patched up really well. You know, Mahomes is like that Flex Seal commercial where the guy shows up and there's this gaping hole and he just covers it up and the leak stops.
Fantastic, right? Beard on that guy, by the way.
Yeah. Mahomes is Flex Seal for all of your problems. He just covers it up, you're good to go. Chad Henne ain't doing that, right? So to me, I would get to 7 all the way before I would be hesitant to bet the Bills. I don't know, football fans, you know, I know that we're engrossed in football, but I'm sure all of you are aware that there is a return happening in another sport that's kind of a big deal. The UFC's most notorious icon is stepping back into the octagon this Saturday. Be sure that you're not missing out on what is one of the most highly anticipated fights in a very long time. Obviously, I'm talking about Conor McGregor. He's back in the octagon, and with the DraftKings Sportsbook app, you can enjoy this like really no one else can, because with promo code PFF, you can bet $1 at 257-1 odds, which means you can turn $1 into $257. You can do that on Saturday, and then on Sunday, the two championship games, conference championship games, are being played. It's the greatest Sunday in the entire year, and DraftKings Sportsbook is here to make sure your weekend is absolutely awesome. The DraftKings Sportsbook app is safe, secure, and reliable. One of the great things is it's easy to deposit as it is to withdraw, which is not the case at many other sports books that, you know, we may have used to know. So go download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the promo code PFF when you sign up, and you get $1 bet at 257-1 odds on McGregor. So go make that happen. Place your bet with DraftKings. You will not regret it. This weekend is going to be awesome. Do not miss out. This is for a limited time only, obviously, so go make it happen. You must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER or in Indiana, 1-800-9-WITH-IT. There's only a couple of weekends left of football, so if you have not gotten the Monkey Knife Fight yet, there's still some time, but you got to hustle. And if you deposit $20 when you sign up, you're going to get, you need to use promo code PFF, but you're going to get a free PFF Edge annual subscription. This is a great time to get it because the draft is coming up. That means you get the draft guide, and then it carries you all the way through next season with all of PFF's premium written content, fantasy rankings, all that stuff. So it's a great time to get in on it. $20 deposit, get a $40 value, and then you can play all of the great daily fantasy and prop games at Monkey Knife Fight. Plus, they have some really cool merch. Deshaun Watson rocks it, so maybe you should as well. MonkeyKnifeFight.com, go get it. This podcast is also brought to you by PristineAuction.com. Check out their daily auctions with a $1 starting bid on over 8,000 football items that are up for auction. Signed helmets, balls, jerseys, and much, much more. Pristine Auction guarantees authenticity on every product. Use promo code PFF for $10 off your first invoice. PristineAuction.com. This is the time to get a PFF subscription because you get two best weekends of football games left. You get the draft, you got free agency coming up, and then if you get an annual subscription right now, it carries you all the way through next season, so you don't have to worry about signing up in July or whatever it is. A lot of good stuff on the Edge subscription. Gives you all the premium written content plus all the draft guide stuff that Mike Renner has been working very, very hard on. There's nothing like it in the entire industry, so get that if you're into the draft. And if you want to enjoy these last two weekends, that means you need the PFF props tool. I can't tell you how lucrative it has been for both Eric and I and many others that use it. An absolute lifesaver, plus all the betting dashboards and the DFS optimizer for the last couple of tournaments here. That's with an elite subscription. And if you use promo code ACTION, A-C-T-I-O-N, you can get a free year of Action Network's Action Pro with your elite subscription. So a ton of great stuff out there. And if you're looking for some free content, some good podcasts out there, including the Chris Collinsworth podcast with Richard Sherman. They had a great conversation with Devontae Adams a few weekends ago. Listen to that if you're preparing for this Packers-Bucks game, because he talks about the first game that they played, and it's a very interesting conversation. So go to check that out wherever you download your podcasts. So let's actually talk about this game now. It is Chiefs -3, yes? I guess that it would be 3.5. What's the total on it?
It was 51 the last time I looked. 50. No, sorry. The other game's 51. This game's 54. This has gone down, I think, at half a point.
Okay. I want to take
54 basically. So
54 is saying Mahomes is playing.
That's what we were saying about the Seattle versus LA game 2 weeks ago. When you hang a spread, that can be speculative or whatever. When you hang a total, like, and I know limits are lower on totals than they are on spreads this all over, but also this time of week. But it's significant that you're laying. I mean, you're basically, there's intel here that Mahomes is playing.
By the way, can I say one last thing about the Browns?
Yeah.
If the Browns don't do everything in their power to get playmakers this offseason, I don't know what is going on.
They're a significant regression candidate if they don't.
I want to push back on the, Odell would have made a difference here. Stephon Diggs would have made a difference. Odell has not played at Stephon Diggs level, and I am an Odell fan. Like, I love watching the guy play, but he just has not been that type of player. They need that type of player to be a legit contender, right? To give them the ability to come back in these types of games. I went back to week six. Okay. Week six was Bills Chiefs. It was in Buffalo. And this game was very interesting for a couple of reasons. There was some weather. The weather appeared to impact both quarterbacks a little bit. Josh Allen did not play tremendously well. Mahomes didn't play that much. And what I mean by that is the Bills forced the Chiefs to run the ball. In fact, it was the lowest pass rate for the Chiefs all season. Yep. Just 45% of their plays were passes. Their average on the season without that game was almost 69% on the year. That is dramatic. The tricky thing about that is they had 27 pass plays. 7 of them went for 15 plus yards. So like the Chiefs are so hard to stop even when you force them out of the ability to pass the ball, and then they were running the ball for 8 yards a clip.
It also helped that they had the 245 on the ground. Not all of that was designed. Some of that was Mahomes running when pressed.
So my question to you, do the Bills do that again? Or is it a little different with Mahomes injury? You know, like if he comes out there and maybe do you want to test him a little bit?
I'll say this. If they are confident that Mahomes is healthy, they are smart enough to do the exact same thing. The Bills get it, right? Like the Bills, they know that like you're not going to get the explosive plays that you got last time. You're not going to get you run the simulation a million times and you're not going to get nearly as many situations like they got last time. I still think that's the preferred way to play Kansas City. And to the Chiefs' credit, look, today they were without Edwards-Helaire. You know, Le'Veon Bell is, I mean, might as well have us back there.
I have a story for you. So I'm watching the pregame, right? And it's the CBS pregame, and they have like 6 people in that pregame. It's a whole cluster. And the players running on the field, and each guy is calling out who's going to be a big, you know, contributor in this game. And I don't know who it was. I want to say it was Cowher, bless his heart. And I'm maybe getting this wrong, so don't quote me on this. But goes, the key to this game for the Chiefs is Le'Veon Bell. And I'm like, buddy, you are setting yourself up for to be embarrassed.
Well, he was the one that was all up in arms about the Colts going for 4th down the previous week. So
sure enough, it's Daryl Williams.
And Daryl played great.
Because what Daryl gets is he goes, I'm a guy that whenever I get a chance, I've got to make the most of it. I can't dance around. I got to hit the hole, and I got to get as much as I can.
Well, what have I always said? Running backs with low self-esteem are the best running backs. If you don't think you're ever going to get another carry, I want you running the football for me because you're not going to dance around.
The low self-esteem thing is a little mean. Like, really what you mean is guys that are kind of afraid that they might lose their job on the next carry.
I don't want entitlement in my back.
Yeah. I don't want top picks.
Yeah.
And he was fantastic, as you would have assumed for a running back playing in the Chiefs system. A couple other things on this game. So that was the Chiefs side of things, and it held the Chiefs back relative to expectation, right? They still won the game rather convincingly, but the real reason for that was the way that Allen played on the other side. It was his 5th lowest graded game of the season.
There was a lot of weather in that game.
There was a lot of weather in that game, but you would expect Josh Allen to overcome that. That's the whole narrative around him, right? He has huge hands. He can throw it through a tree, like all of these things. But I think there was something really uncharacteristic about this game for Josh Allen. His average depth of target was 11.5. It was his 2nd deepest of the season, just 3.5 yards per attempt, his lowest of the season. That's not what the Bills are. The Bills are not a throw it over your head every time team. It was uncharacteristic for them not to hit those open passes over the intermediate range. I think Dable will have a much better game plan for this game. And I would not expect the Bills to be that anemic on offense. So what I'm trying to kind of talk myself into is, you know, if this gets out to 3.5, if this gets out to 4 on some encouraging news from Mahomes, I could see myself betting the Bills.
We've been pro Chiefs all year. We did have a Buffalo 10-1 to win the Super Bowl a couple weeks ago, but we're more loaded up on Kansas City than we are Buffalo. I see no issue with taking Buffalo ATS this week.
Like, what do the Bills? So
you're not getting a good number, by the way, right now, right? Because you're seeing like plus, you know, it's 2.5.
Yeah, I'm not saying bet it now.
Yeah.
But I think you should bet the Chiefs now. Like, if you think the Chiefs, if you think Mahomes is overcoming the concussion, which I think all signs point to, and you feel as though the toe is not that big of a deal, yeah, then you bet the Chiefs right now. What do you think the biggest thing the Bills have to do to like win this game is? What is that for them? Is there a matchup they've got to win?
Actually, both teams have the same formula. Their defense gets 3 stops or more, and their offense like converts touchdowns in the red zone. And like, there was an interesting stat, by the way, it was an interesting stat where they said the Chiefs are like the worst defense, one of the worst defenses in the NFL in terms of giving up touchdowns and red zone trips. Mm-hmm. And the Browns are one of the best at getting touchdowns and red zone trips. And didn't we see a little bit as to why those stats are kind of bunk, in that like the Chiefs don't give up that many red zone trips and the Browns don't get in the red zone that much. So then we saw that was only 17 points today, even though Cleveland was like 2-for-2 in the red zone. So, or actually 2-for-3, I guess, if you count the fumble. I think both teams are the same. Like, you know, the Bills have a little bit stronger corners, although, you know, whatever. And neither team really stops the run all that well, I think, on principle. Mm-hmm. Neither team rushes the passer that great. I know Jerry Hughes had a really good game against Lamar the other day, but neither team rushes the passer all that great. Both teams are playing the waiting game for the other team's offense to make a mistake. It's a classic defense doesn't matter game.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, because I honestly think that both defenses will play the same way. Yeah. Right, because both offenses are so similar. They're going to pass a ton, and they have playmakers. And it really comes down to which offense is going to do a better job of creating space in the intermediate area.
I just want to briefly talk about the market again. Kansas City, so I do this every week. Kansas City was plus 200 on our friends at DraftKings Sportsbook last week. They are still 200. Packers went from about 375 to 220. Buffalo went from that 450-ish range to 325, and Tampa, who is our futures bet for the week, went from plus 900 to plus 450. So the market is sort of taking this like they're not, the Chiefs are still the prohibitive favorite in to win the Super Bowl, but they're taking kind of a splitting the difference approach, because if you win the first round of the playoffs, your odds should go up. They didn't. But they didn't go down
as a result of an injury
the most valuable player in all of football, sans maybe Rodgers.
Yep.
So that's an interesting thing to monitor, because if you like Kansas City, you talk about betting them -3. Actually, the play might be plus 200, because if they come out and just steam Buffalo here, what are they to win?
What are they in the Super Bowl?
What are they in the Super Bowl against possibly Green Bay?
They're 3.
Yeah, so this is a situation where this might be better. I have to do the math in my head, but this might be better than the rollover situation.
Anything else on this game? I mean, if you had to take a side right now at -3, I am probably taking the Chiefs.
Well, here's the pick I like in this one. I like under 54.
Yeah,
I like under today. I had first half under. I had. First half Chiefs.
That's a really good play on the Mahomes plays, but turf toe's an issue. Oh, and by the way, both these teams are smart and are gonna compress the field.
Like, because look, the this is actually
which
very
sucks, by the way.
Yeah, very telling thing, by the way. The Chiefs, and because I watch these things when I have an under. Like I'm like our buddy Josh Hermsmeyer, who bets unders too. It's like you look at these things. The Chiefs got their last play of the first quarter ended with 30 seconds left on the clock. And Mahomes turned around and started running to the sideline.
Yeah.
They didn't even like think. They were trying to get out of this game, and they were probably smart to do it given what happened, trying to get out of this game as quickly as possible. And I think both teams, when they see that other offense on the other side of the field, are going to be similar. This could get over. This could be the dumbest pick ever because both of these offenses are terrific. We said the same thing about Titans-Baltimore. Mm-hmm. We said the same thing about Baltimore-Buffalo. We said the same thing about the Kansas City-Cleveland total was 57.
Yeah. Well, actually, this is I do want to talk about this a little bit. We didn't talk about Bills-Ravens that much. Were you worried? Does the Bills' performance against the Ravens worry you at all? You know, they scored 17 points. It wasn't fantastic. There weren't that many missed opportunities. You know, Josh Allen overthrew a wide open touchdown, but that's going to happen. Variance is there. Were you worried about that performance at all?
No.
Does that give you any pause?
No.
Okay. Let me ask you this about Baltimore, because Baltimore was a disaster. Does Baltimore have a no-brainer decision to re-sign Lamar Jackson, to extend Lamar Jackson?
It's not a no-brainer.
I agree with you.
I think that they'll do it, but and I think that 99 out of 100 people will support it, and I'll probably support it. But it's not a no-brainer.
Yeah, this is the way I would approach it. It's something that you have to look at carefully, the alternate pathways. It just is. And it's not, I mean, Lamar Jackson is tremendous, but you know, there are some things that the past, and I would say this, the reason ultimately that I would extend him is that I'm not sure you can, and we're talking about this with Josh Allen, it's like they have no weapons. They don't. You know, Marquise Hollywood Brown is a nice third option.
Yep.
Mark Andrews is a decent tight end, and that's it. That is it. You also lost your two best offensive linemen this year. You've got your right tackles rotating every possession. So as bad as that looked for Baltimore, and I do think they should consider their options, like you've got to give this guy a chance. You know, you got to have guys getting open.
Yeah, and the problem is sort of the window. Like last year was obviously the perfect storm, but like you're nearing the end of his rookie deal. Like the next year is sort of the last year to really give him weapons that are high. Otherwise, you're going back into the draft and those guys are obviously cheaper, but they're also more volatile. This is an offseason where there's a number of wide receivers who would make good fits for Baltimore.
There are a ton. I would say Mr. Allen Robinson should be considered. Will Fuller, Kenny G, mm-hmm. your boy, Galladay from the Lions. All right, let's go to Bucks Packers now. As I said, I was prepared. I was prepared for the Saints to go into Lambeau and them to have zero chance. And I tweeted this out a couple of times after the first quarter, at halftime. The winner of this Tampa Bay-New Orleans game was the Green Bay Packers. Watching this game at home, let me set the scene for you. Aaron Rodgers has four fingers of tequila. He's staring at the hologram of the MVP trophy that's already been shipped to him because he has it in the bag. Davante Adams is hanging out on the couch on the other side. Maybe he's a tequila man as well. And they're cackling. They're just laughing their asses off because the Bucs can't get out of their own way. Drew Brees can't throw the ball downfield. And they have to come to Lambeau where it's going to be fucking freezing. And they're going to freeze their asses off and the Packers are going to stomp all over them. I still kind of think that's the case. Tell me why I'm wrong.
I don't know. I mean, people are betting a little bit into Tampa here. I see it at 3.5 now. Well, no, it keeps going back and forth between 4 and 3.5 on DraftKings here. Here's the thing, and it was supposedly going to be true this past week with LA. You know, if Green Bay's secondary weapons don't step up and play well, there's a chance that they can get, they can get caught here, right? And if Adams, you know, Adams isn't like what we should have been focusing on is secondary plays and the Packers with Tanyan and you know some of the players there like made enough plays.
Yeah, Lazard and Scaling.
Yeah, Lazard played well. I mean, they missed some. The game could have been stretched out even further. But Rodgers did a really good job of going to the secondary players. They ran the football
that's
well.
That's what he's done all year, by the way.
And Tampa, here's a weird thing. So I think Tampa's obviously an inferior defense to New Orleans, an inferior defense to LA, but they do one thing better than those two teams do, which is stop the run. And so And so if they relent on that a little bit, they might have more talent than those two teams and maybe be able to stop what Green Bay did on early downs to LA, who is like kind of soft against the run by design. And you get Rodgers maybe in some long yardage situations, and you get drops by Valdez Scantling, you get drops by Lazard, you get, you know, not necessarily characteristic play out of Adams. To me, that's how Tampa Bay wins.
Let me read you something. This game will be in prime time on Fox. By the way, if you're a Fox executive right now, you just bought a yacht, because every human on earth is going to watch this game. Brady Rodgers in Lambeau. I mean, this is the perfect matchup. This might be an even more perfect matchup for ratings than the Super Bowl with Chiefs and Packers. But on Sunday evening, it will be 24 degrees and snow showers. Now, do I think Tom Brady can play in 24 degrees and snow showers? Yes, I do. Do I think that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense has a chance in hell at stopping Devontae Adams? Devontae Adams will have 250 yards against this defense. They're so aggressive, and if there's snow on the ground and it is cold, he is going to eat. Now, I think one of the reasons this line may not get out further is the beatdown that Tampa Bay put on Green Bay earlier this year. It was Rodgers' lowest graded game of the season by a country fucking mile. I mean, it was a disaster, right? The pick six, Adams had a drop that turned into a pick as well, lost 37-10 or whatever. Chris asked Devontae Adams about this when he had him on his podcast 2 weeks ago. Go listen to it, Chris Collinsworth podcast with Richard Sherman. They had Devontae on 2 weeks ago. And he says, what the hell went on in that game? And Devontae's response was, I'm going to paraphrase it here. He goes, we had no adjustments. We had no game plan for what happens if they blitz. And he said that was kind of a turning point in the season. They realized they had to be so prepared because teams were going to throw a ton of shit at them. Do you think that means that things change here in this game?
Yeah. I mean, you also saw, look, the Packers were favorites in that game in Tampa. People mm-hmm. thought they were going to win. They were up 10-0. I know that was the side of the game I liked. And the offense for the Tampa didn't really have to do anything. You know, that was a really weird game. I don't think the data from that game matters a ton. It was fluky plays. There were things that I don't know how much you can take from it. It was, you know, much like Cleveland's whole season as far as like the games and the weather and all that kind of stuff. So, but when I look at this game, like the nice part about this is that, you know, Breeze actually only has one road playoff game his whole career, mm-hmm. that win. Brady has been playing in inclement weather in playoff games his whole career.
Yeah.
It's much like, Green Bay doesn't have to be this way, but Buffalo, Kansas City, and Tampa have to be this way. The Bucs have to be scoring on almost every drive, I think, to make this thing close.
What's the total on this game?
51.5. So it's a high total.
Take the over. This might be my favorite play right now, the over in Bucs Packers, because everyone thinks that the weather, like that snow means you're just going to run the ball into the ground. No, when it snows, you throw it. Like, that is what you do, because the defensive backs are at a much, much – they are way worse off than any other position on the field. So I am worried, though, about how the rest of the Bucs players handle it. And the coaching difference here is astronomical. It's astronomical. The Packers are going to go look at this film of what the Saints did, and they're just going to go, yeah, hey, Rodgers, don't have a noodle for an arm. Don't turn it over all the time. And we'll just play the same. We'll goad them into running the ball with Leonard Fournette on first down. We'll hold them back a little bit. We'll force Brady to hit these deep bombs. They'll miss a couple. And we're going to win the game handily. And then I think the Bucs play catch up, and that's how it goes over 51.
Okay. Yeah, I think even then, like, your the weather right now, it's looking like for the one thing that the Bucs get a break with, the game's at 3, so it's the first game, so there's probably going to be sun, right, to a degree. So it's not going to be cold.
Oh, this is the day game.
This is the day game. So you get.
Oh, really? I thought this was the prime time.
So you get the
game.
Day game. And again, weather, 7 days out, throw a huge error bars around these things. But 6 mile per hour
wind
is
a bummer. This should be the night game.
Yeah. I don't know.
You're wearing a Chiefs shirt.
Well, they alternate it, right? Last year, Brady, Titans Chiefs was
the Brady Rodgers should be the night game.
So they're probably going to essentially, like, I don't think the weather's actually that bad. So, like, the over is probably a better play here.
Yeah, the cold is one thing. The snow is one thing. If it was windy and sleeting or something like that, I would be nervous about it from a scoring perspective.
They heat the field. Like, this is silly. They heat the sidelines.
I also, so right now, if I'm looking at these, at -3, I'm taking the Chiefs. I like the under there. It's -3.5 Packers. Oh, man.
You could take -3.5. You're going to have to pay up a little bit.
I think I like the Packers and the over. And I hate it. I hate it because I was all about the Bucks having turned it around, and they said, oh, you thought we turned it around? And they just took a pile of shit and smacked it in my face. Terrible.
I kind of want to, like, look, I kind of want to wait on Chiefs just because, again, like, I'm a little worried about the Mahomes thing. Mm-hmm. And again, we'll have our podcast on Wednesday. We could take that as the lock of the week if you'd like it.
We going to try and get Nagler on?
We can get Nagler on if we throw out the bat signal. Does the bat signal have, like, his beard?
Dude, he was in prime form.
I got to say, though, I was a lot less judgmental of Aaron after the ordeal that I went through today, the Chiefs game.
Oh, really?
Like, after the game, I was like, I had gotten into such a rut because Kansas City hadn't played a game I was nervous about for, like, since.
Oh, you just mean like a tilting fan on Twitter.
Yeah, like, yeah. I was.
Hey, let me tell you guys a little story here. So I get to the office at halftime of the New Orleans-Tampa Bay game. I am freaking out because I have all this money riding on Tampa Bay. So I'm sitting there, I'm watching the game, whatever. Eric rolls in. Chiefs out. Eric gets a call from our friend Seren Petro. So I'm trying to watch this Bucks game, and you and Seren are just going on and on about the Chiefs. I mean, it's like the classic two fans talking about their game. I heard why the touchback rule is a great rule. I heard how that helmet-to-helmet was really questionable. I don't know if you can call it that way. Moving target, this and that. I mean, it was, and I'm telling you this, it was funny. You know, it reminded me that fandom is such a crazy thing. And Nagler does a great job of being a fan. And I should say this, in this game, and I mentioned it before, the coaching difference, I think, is huge. I can't understand what Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich are doing. It just makes
Bruce
no sense to me.
Bruce Arians is the Mike Vrabel of this year's championship round.
There you go.
Yeah.
Mike Vrabel would have been very proud of this game script for Tampa Bay. He was beaming.
Not only do they win, but they instill toughness. They impose their will on the other team. It was actually quite good. Kansas City, this is a cool feat. So I was thinking about, okay, LaFleur's a repeat person. Is LaFleur the first person? It's got to be George Seifert of the 49ers. First two seasons as a head coach, made it to the conference title game. Seifert made in 89, and then 90, they lost to the Giants at home to not three-peat. LaFleur did it this time, two straight NFC championship games to start his career. I think Seifert, both of those years, they were 14-2. So, you know, LaFleur is like a rung below in the record book from Seifert. Andy Reid, the Chiefs have hosted the AFC title game three consecutive years. It's the first time it's ever happened in AFC history. The only team to do it in NFC history was the Philadelphia Eagles in the middle of the 2000s with Andy Reid. We're dealing with right now coaching, whether you look at LaFleur, whether you look at, you know, what McDermott and that franchise is doing on that side, which is tremendous. I think we are looking at a have and have not situation as far as front offices, as far as coaching, that is where the cream is bubbling to the, like, look, the Ravens have had this tremendous edge for years based upon being good at special teams, using all four downs, looking for a different maxima on the space of how to play football.
Yeah, in the draft too.
And they hit Buffalo, who does everything similarly, just like a couple year lag behind them. They hit Buffalo, and the talent differential. Don't you want your coaching staff to make the talent differential a one-to-one like isomorphism with the scoreboard. And that's what happened on Saturday. The Ravens are awesome, but they're like 14, you know, not 14 points worse, but they're worse than Buffalo talent-wise. And that's what transpired. And I think like, and the same thing's happening in Kansas City, the same thing's happening in Green Bay, the same thing's happening when LA faces Seattle. Like what we're seeing, I think, is a awesome sort of evolution where there's like half a dozen franchises where we don't have to worry about whether or not they're going to do the right thing. And that came, that bubbled to the surface this week.
Coaching matters. Yeah. Matters a heck of a lot. It'll be interesting to see what Buffalo, you know, you'd assume Daboll's gone, but now we just found this out before we started recording the podcast. Brandon Staley is going to be the Chargers head coach. And that is fascinating because, so do they keep Shane Steichen now?
Yeah, so that was it. So in our defensive coaching rankings, Salah was one all year. Then what Staley did in round one propelled him to first. So the top two defensive play callers in our metrics are now head coaches in the NFL. Shane Steichen finished the regular season as the NFL's best play caller by our metrics. Just basically means you take the grades, you take what you expect, take the difference, and we're going to call that coaching. And so, you know, the Chargers, bad offensive line, rookie quarterback, receivers kind of banged up. They didn't get a whole lot out of Mike Williams. They didn't get a whole lot out of Hunter Henry at times. Running back Eckler hurt half the year, and they were one of the better offenses in football. If you get, I think if you're Staley, you have to convince Steichen to stay.
Mm-hmm. I would think so too.
And then, you know, that's a legit contender with the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC West, I feel like, as long as you don't get significant regression out of Herbert.
So the Chargers went Brandon Staley. The Jaguars went Urban Meyer. The Falcons went Arthur Smith. The Jets, Robert Saleh. And the Lions get Dan Campbell, who did a tremendous job coaching Jared Cook today in the Saints' loss. The Texans have yet to get anyone. They appear to be in a lot of trouble. That means that Eric Bieniemy is out there. Joe Brady is out there. Would any of those guys be wise to actually take the Texans' job?
Somebody described it as going from the least attractive position to the most unattractive position. And that sounds like a distinction without a difference, but it's not.
No.
Like, you know, there's two different classes of jobs. I mean, and that's really where I think the league might have to step in and say, like, and I don't know what the league can do. Like, if you get rid of Watson, like, you can't force somebody to be the head coach. And if you're Eric Bieniemy or somebody who's, like, Eric Bieniemy is really the one where you're like, you wait so long, what's another year? What's another ring with Kansas City?
Well, but Bieniemy's not taking that job if Watson's leaving, right? Bieniemy is the guy that Watson supposedly wanted. You would think that the Texans would be making that move to appease Watson and keep him there. Maybe that is actually good enough for Watson. But I would be very concerned, personally, and I will find it very interesting. I also think it's very interesting that the Lions hired Dan Campbell, but then again, it's the Lions, so there you go. Anyways, I still think Joe Brady is – I'm interested to know what kind of a person he is, you know, because I think that's the –
Here's my concern with Brady and maybe why this isn't the year for him vis-a-vis the Houston Texans. He doesn't have experience being a head coach, and that – program is going to require some very headstrong leader.
That's a great point. You do not have an organizational structure that's going to give you
this
something.
This is a university that's starting over, and you're going to want somebody who's been the dean of Harvard. You don't want the best professor at Williams College. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like there's a difference there. And while if you're in a place that's like take Atlanta. I have no issue with Arthur Smith going to Atlanta. Atlanta's a stable franchise for the more or less.
Has a bunch of veteran players.
Has a bunch of veteran players. Has a good infrastructure. Arthur Smith's never been a head coach before at the NFL level. It's probably going to be fine. But another, like if it's a place where like this person's got to be headstrong, and you know hire some people, and you know, because the hires in Houston, like you think it's going to be hard to find a head coach there.
Yep.
Try to find an offensive coordinator who's worth his salt, because there are not that many of them.
Well, but then you look at the Eagles, and this is another one that's there. To me, Daboll and Bieniemy would be smart to look at the Eagles' job very carefully because of the structure they have there. And it's a, you know, you don't get head coaching offers every day. But they're both in systems, and you could say the same about Brady because he's been that good calling plays. And offensive coaches are so dearly needed. Like, you're going to get another shot, right? I would not be surprised if one of these guys turns it down. Maybe Dable in particular.
Yeah. The Bieniemy thing is so interesting to me because now it's sort of like, you know, he can almost – it's weird because he should be choosy even though doing so would probably still – like, he'd have to wait longer. If I'm the Eagles, I show some progressivism, though, and I say, look, just because one Andy Reid disciple – left us and didn't work, you know, with the progressivism in that way, you could take other differences of that word, but just say something like, look, we're not going to ignore Bieniemy because he happens to have this same variable that Doug Peterson has, mm-hmm. right? Like, we're going to consider him because they're not the same guy, right? Like, you know, so, but I think everybody's just assuming that Bieniemy's not a candidate for Philadelphia because he had, you know, he was also a Reed offensive coordinator, very similar to Doug Peterson. That would be something if I were Philadelphia to show, like, look, like, we're actually going to dot every I and cross every T. Like, you interview Bieniemy as well.
Absolutely.
And that team really probably does need, given, I mean, the problem with the Eagles is they had veterans on that team that still need to be, mm-hmm. you know, they're pretty, like, no, up against it. They have veterans that need to be motivated, and a young, like, hotshot coach might not be the one to do that.
That is a very good point. All right, I want to close it out on this. This is a question that I had, and I wasn't quite sure what the answer was, so I'm going to ask you. Who needs to win on Sunday more, Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers?
Well, the easy answer is Rodgers, because, like, Brady – is there anything Brady could have done this year in Tampa Bay to tarnish his legacy?
Yeah, I mean, it could have been a total disaster.
Yeah.
Arm had fallen off. You know, okay. And it had been like...
So Brett Favre had a really good year for Minnesota, but then was, I mean, sent pictures of himself to Jen Sturger and then, like, was terrible.
Not a good move.
20 interceptions the following year. Like, ran the Vikings into the ground the second year. Joe Namath played for, like, the Chargers. I can't remember if it was the Rams or something. Like, he was – most of these guys were kind of awful in their second stints. Kurt Warner had a renaissance. Like, there's been – but, like, I mean, you won 6 Super Bowls. Like, there's really – and the thing about it is it was never going to be so bad in Tampa that it overshadowed – the badness there overshadowed the fact that New England was 7-9. Despite some good variants. Like, New England, other than the COVID stuff, like, they caught the Chargers on a day where the Chargers couldn't, like, tie their own shoes. Like, they you know, the AFC East still had the Jets in it, so that was 2 free wins for New England. New England was kind of, like, probably more like a 4-12 team if it wasn't for Belichick and some luck. And, like, was there ever anything Brady could have done to overshadow that, given everything that they put him around him?
Yeah. So I immediately said Rodgers too, and then I kept thinking about it and thinking about it. This season would put such a – like, if Rodgers wins it next season versus this season, you know, and they seem to have a really nice infrastructure there, things are working out, he does not appear to be aging in a way that's detrimental to him. But for Brady, the importance of this season relative to any other season going forward, I think cannot be emphasized enough. Given that it would be him walking into a new place and immediately going to the Super Bowl, and the fact that it would be in Tampa Bay. So I think it's a toss-up.
The thing is Rodgers does not want to be thrown in a pile of quarterbacks who won one or fewer Super Bowls. But that's where he's at. And Breeze just entered that pile. Warner has just won. He's a Hall of Famer. I mean, look, like, it's a weird, like, you know, Marino zero, like, it's, you know, it's tough. My biggest thing is, and maybe this should not cloud the answer. The Packers have so much better of a chance to win the Super Bowl should they make it than Tampa does.
You are dead on.
Like,
I am so happy that we bet the Packers multiple times throughout the season.
Because here's the thing, like, if the Packers lose on Sunday, the gears can spin over what could have been, right? It's why their 2007 loss was never viewed as that big of a failure, because they were going to go play the 18-0 Patriots. Mm-hmm. it was why the, you know, it was why the 2011 loss was so much worse, because they were actually the best team in the league. Mm-hmm. If the Packers lose to Tampa, they will have missed an opportunity to of a legitimate shot to win a Super Bowl game. Tampa, I just don't like Tampa's happy to be here.
It'll be in Tampa Bay. I believe that Tom Brady may be one of the best motivators to have ever played in the NFL. And that man will have that dude every Sunday morning when he tweets out a hype video, half of America passes out. They're so juiced up. The other half runs through a brick wall. So, like, I don't know, man. The happy to be here thing, I think, is a little bit overrated. He will have those guys absolutely ready to go. So, if it's Packers Chiefs, I have Chiefs -3. You agree?
Yeah.
Okay. If it's Chiefs Bucks, I'd have Chiefs -4.5.
I agree with that. It was three, the close three the last time they played, and the Bucks have probably only gotten better.
And Chiefs stomped all over them.
Yeah. Like, people are going to look and say, oh, that game landed three, and they might overreact to it. I would say this. I would put it actually more at 2.5 Green Bay, 3.5 Tampa.
Okay. I like that. I can get on board with that. Bills, Packers.
Bills, Packers would be Green Bay -3.
I agree. That's exactly. Both three. I agree. And Bills, Bucks.
The game, no. People, man, that's like Brady sticking it to Buffalo one more time, isn't it? Buffalo -4.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. No way. -4?
There are going, dude. Devin White is going to give up 11 for 11 for like 100. All right,
we've found it then. If it the betting opportunity that you are waiting for, if you are rooting simply to bet on the game, is Bills Bucks, because there is no way that it is Bills -4.
Oh, I
would venture.
They might hang 2.5, and I'm going to be all over it the way I was all over Buffalo -2.5 last night.
I could see the Bucks being favored by 3. Just going to let you know. I don't agree with it, but I'm saying.
Yeah. Differential alone.
I agree with you. But I'm saying they will just watch Tom Brady beat the best team in the NFC in Lambeau. Yeah. It will be in Tampa Bay. Okay?
Yeah.
And there will be question marks around Mahomes no matter what happens if they lose. So you are waiting for Bills Bucks so that you can bet that game. We'll be back on Wednesday, of course, for our normal podcast. Should I save my bachelor story for then?
I think so.
Okay.
Thank you to all the people that came and watched us live. It's quite a few, and
that's great. I didn't even know.
This was a lot of fun. A lot of fun to do it live.
This was great. We'll do it next week as well. And the games will be a little earlier. That's nice.
Yeah.
Sunday. Why not?
We'll be, there's not an outcome that I'll be pissed about.
I have the wine ready for Eric should we need to ramp him up. And I have copious bachelor notes. I have a story. You are going to laugh.
Should I watch some Bachelor this week just to sort of like get?
I don't think so. And I mean,
so there's not really anything on.
If you want to, go ahead. But there is a story about the first episode that is going to make you, particularly you, cry laughing, and I absolutely can't wait. So you should tune in on Wednesday for me to tell that story. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Love you all. Hope you enjoyed the football. We'll talk to you on Wednesday.